Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading some more chapters from Tales of Al, The Water Rescue Dog, The Making of a Super Athlete by Lynn Cox, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's readings with Tales of Al by Lynn Cox. In the last chapter, we learned that Lynn was telling of the first time that she body surfed with Otis Pork and Beans and the exhilaration that she felt when they were both riding the waves. And this is Chapter 17, First Course Home Run. Ferruccio and Roberto and Donatella had never taken their Terra Nova's body surfing, but now they were eager to try it. It would be a new skill for the dogs, and they could learn that, and that would make them more versatile in the water. It would keep them engaged and make them happy hounds. I asked Ferruccio if he ever experienced dogs that were afraid of water. He said that he did, but it was rare. Most people started their dogs swimming when they were puppies. If the dogs were scared, their owners and instructors worked with them, and through time the dogs were able to gain confidence and overcome their fears. Ferruccio asked if I had any experience with dogs that were fearful of water. I told him that there were two dogs and two children that I worked with that were terrified. I took a sip of my drink and started my story about Jimmy. As a young boy, he was terrified of the water. He became afraid when his swimming instructor just picked him up and tossed him into the deep end of the pool. He expected Jimmy to swim. Hearing this, Donatella, Ferruccio, and Roberto looked horrified. They wondered how someone could be so heartless and cruel with a child. I said that I did not understand either, but this conversation gave me the opportunity to ask them about their dogs. One of the greatest concerns I had when I watched the video of the lifeguard dogs leaping from a helicopter was whether they were forced to jump from the helicopter, even if they did not want to. I wondered if puppies resisted training. Were they tossed into the water? Shocked, Ferruccio said they never threw puppies into the water. They taught the puppies the skills. They made sure that they were safe first. The puppies learned and became confident. Sometimes the older dogs swam with the puppies, so they would see how to swim, and the puppies would imitate the older dogs. Equally surprised, Roberto said that he never forced a dog to leap out of a helicopter or from a boat. If the dog did not want to jump, they were not forced to do it. How old was the boy? Ferruccio asked. 5 years old, I said. Anger and disbelief filled his eyes. Roberto could not believe people would throw children into water and expect them to swim. Some people believe that if you throw someone into the water, their instincts will kick in and they will swim. I think people need to learn to swim the way you teach your dogs, I said. Yes, you saw us. We hold them and teach them, and the older dogs. They help teach and coach the puppies. It is fun for them and fun for us. I nodded and told him that I taught private swimming lessons and worked with open water swimmers and athletes. They all had fear of the water or things that frightened them about the ocean. Working with Jimmy was one of my biggest challenges. He was so afraid he shook and turned white with fear when he saw me. For the first few lessons, Jimmy's grandmother had to run through the house to catch him and carry him to the pool. He would start screaming, crying, and kicking. His grandmother would hand him to me and hurry into the house. He would be so worked up that he would start coughing and choking and gasping for air. The first time we met, he was so afraid that he tried to scratch, hit, and bite me. I held him and spoke calmly, but he continued screaming and started shouting, "No, no, no, I don't want to go into the water. Leave me alone." I told him he needed to stop crying so he could hear me. Jimmy slapped me across the cheek. I reached for and held his small wrist and told him that it was not okay to hit me. I told him I would never hit him. I promised I would never do anything to hurt him. And I continued to speak slowly and softly, so he had to stop screaming so he could hear me. It was horrible. In my entire life, I have never seen anyone so frightened. I knew this was going to be incredibly difficult for him, and it was going to be extremely challenging for me. I needed to teach him so he would be safe around the water, and I did not want to do anything that would make him even more fearful. I told him that he needed to learn how to swim so that if anyone pushed him into the water again, he could swim to the side of the pool. He needed to be able to swim so he could survive. I held him and said I promised he would be okay and we would figure out how to do this together. I carried Jimmy into the water and told him he could hold on to me or to the side of the pool or he would feel comfortable whatever what he was doing. He climbed higher into my arms as I stepped down into the water. I wanted him to know that people cared about him. I said that I wanted him to be safe in the water, as did his grandmother and parents. Jimmy really did not care what anyone else wanted. All he wanted to do was escape. Calmly, I asked him if he could tell me what happened to him. He said that Bob, the swimming instructor, threw him into the deep end of the pool. He did not know how to swim and sank rapidly to the bottom. Looking up through the water, he could see Bob looking down at him. He could not breathe. He was trying to move his arms to get to the surface, but it didn't work. Finally, Bob jumped into the pool, grabbed Jimmy, pulled him to the surface, and lifted him out of the pool. He demanded that Jimmy stop crying. He said Jimmy was not trying to learn to swim, so he told him that he better start learning now, and he picked Jimmy up. Jimmy screamed, "No, no, don't throw me in the water. I can't swim." But Bob ignored him. He dropped Jimmy into the deep end again. Jimmy tried frantically to swim, but got a mouthful of water and choked. Jimmy said he felt like he was drowning. Bob jumped into the pool and dragged Jimmy out. He shouted at Jimmy, telling him again that he was not trying. Jimmy said it was worse the second time because he had asthma and he could not catch his breath. Now I understood why Jimmy was so afraid. I told him that he had had a very bad teacher and that no one had the right to treat him that way. No one had the right to throw him into the pool. No one had the right to hurt or frighten him. Throwing or pushing someone into a pool is extremely dangerous. He could have been seriously injured. That happened to a daughter of a friend of mine. Kids were playing around the pool, and she was pushed into the water. She hit her head on the concrete bottom and was paralyzed for life. Unfortunately, there are many people who believe that the best way to teach children and adults is just to throw them into the water. There was an Olympic swimming coach from Denmark who taught this way. My friend's daughter, Janine, was so afraid of the coach that she tried to escape by grabbing onto the gutter and climbing out of the pool. The coach caught her by her feet and pulled her back in. Janine hit the side of the pool and knocked out for her two front teeth. Because the coach was an Olympic swimmer, Janine's parents accepted this as the best way to teach their child. I wish Janine had never had this bad experience because she had to overcome so much fear before she eventually learned to swim from a different instructor. I needed to ensure that Jimmy understood that my teaching methods were different. I told Jimmy that the best swimming instructors were gentle and caring, encouraging and supportive. I asked him if he was learning to read. He said he was. I told him that learning to swim was just like learning to read. When he was learning to read, he learned one word and then another, and eventually he could read a sentence and an entire book. He could go to a library and find amazing books and read great stories, or he could buy books at a bookstore and online and learn about himself, his dogs, the world, and beyond, even the universe. Just like a beginning reader, he would learn one swimming skill, then he would learn another, building upon what he learned each step of the way. Eventually, he'd be able to pull his hand and the other and kick and swim across the pool. Jimmy was starting to focus his eyes on me. The most important part of swimming is being able to breathe. If he could not breathe, he could not relax and he could not swim. When he breathed, his lungs filled up like two balloons, and that helped him float. Jimmy was listening, so I told him this was the way I was taught to swim and the way I would teach him. Once I learned the swimming basics from my parents, they took me to the YWCA, and I learned all forms of swimming, the butterfly stroke, the backstroke, breaststroke, and freestyle. The swimming instructors were great, and I discovered that I loved swimming. They encouraged me to join the Manchester, New Hampshire swim team. And when I was 12 years old, my parents moved our family to California so I could train with an Olympic coach. In high school, I swam on both the girls' and boys' swim teams, and I played on the boys' water polo team. There was no girls' team at the time. And I competed on a club water polo team. I swam and played water polo at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and was an assistant coach for both the men's swim and water polo teams. During university, I took Red Cross classes in water safety and swimming instructions to be able to teach swimming. I had my CPR and advanced first aid certification, working with friends who taught at the YWCA and the Jewish Community Center. I improved my teaching techniques. I gave private swimming lessons to children, adults, and dogs. I swam with Olympic swimmers and Olympic coaches, and then for many years I coached triathletes and open water swimmers who wanted to learn how to swim in the ocean and swim faster. Some of them were frightened of swimming in the ocean, but I had a lot of experience. I had broken many world records for swimming in the open water. Jimmy understood that I had been teaching for a long time and that my method was different from what he had experienced. But the only thing that really caught his attention was that I taught dogs how to swim. He was surprised that dogs needed to learn how to swim. I said, just like people, some dogs instinctively knew what to do when they were put into the water, but other dogs needed to learn what to do. Jimmy started to relax and breathe. His body became less rigid. His fear was so strange, as one of the things that I most loved in life was being in the water. It made me feel alive and elated, and swimming gave me some of my greatest and lasting friendships. But for Jimmy, the water was the thing he hated and feared the most. Getting into a pool was reliving his nightmare. He thought he would drown. With patience, trust, understanding, and love, I knew we could transform Jimmy's deep fear of the water into fascination. We had a long way to go, but this traumatic event had happened just recently, 2 or 3 weeks earlier. The sooner we could change the way Jimmy felt about the water, the sooner we would be able to focus on learning to swim and enjoying being in the water. I asked Jimmy if he could hold my hand so we could climb into the pool together. He nodded tentatively. Clenching my hand so tightly it turned white, in a shaky voice he said he thought he would be okay. Walking stiffly, he forced himself to the pool edge and stood staring at the water for at least 30 seconds, trying to build up his courage. I told him we could hold hands and get into the water together, and I would continue to hold his hand for as long as he wanted. He looked at me and inched forward. It was torture. He was shaking and squeezing his eyes closed like he was in excruciating pain. His first step he made, and then he quickly made the second step, and suddenly he felt the water was creeping up to his waist. Assuring him that I would not let go of his hand, I asked, "You play baseball, right?" He nodded and smiled slightly. We were on second. "Can we try for third base?" He smiled. "Third step, right?" "Yes," I said. Taking a deep breath as if he might be taking his last, he stepped down and landed safely on the third step. He caught his breath and stepped into the pool bottom. "Home run," I said, and swept him up in my arms. I hugged him tightly and told him that he had done a fantastic job. He beamed. Those 4 steps down would change his life forever. "Now what are we going to do?" he said, worried but finding his balance and some more courage. "Can you let go of my hand for a moment so you can turn around?" I asked. He tentatively released my hand and slowly turned. "Look how far you've come. Those were 4 giant steps. You are very brave. You can smile now," I said. He grinned. Light came back into his brown eyes, and he started to gain some confidence. I told him that what I would like to do was walk around the shallow end with him so he could feel the water. I asked him if he wanted to hold my hand or walk on his own. I think he was starting to trust himself more and more. He knew what he was going to do next. He was not sure what I would do. I was not sure either. I had to watch him and make sure he felt safe, show him how he could progress, and encourage him, but stop if it was too much for him, if he felt afraid. Otherwise, the gains would be made and then lost. But Jimmy showed me his courage. He said he could walk around the shallow end on his own. I think I saw a shiver race up his back, but he lifted his arms and shook them as if he was trying to shake off his fear. I asked him to feel the water pressing around him, to feel how different it was to walk through water than it was to walk on land, and to feel how his arms floated and his legs moved slowly against the water's resistance, and how the water canceled out some of Earth's gravity, so walking through the water was like being an astronaut walking on the moon. When we were done with the first lesson, Jimmy could not believe that was all we were going to do that day, so I reminded him of what he had accomplished. He had gotten into the water almost on his own, he'd learned how to find balance, and he had walked across the moon together. But now he had to hurry up and get out of the pool because I had to leave to teach another lesson. He looked at me with incredible surprise. No one had ever had to tell him to get out of the pool. People spend all their energy trying to convince him to get in. Quickly, I wrapped Jimmy up in a warm towel and we exchanged high fives. He had done a great job. His smile was as bright as the morning, but when I told him that I looked forward to seeing him the next day, his smile faded and his body tensed. I told him that we were going to have more time to play in the water. We would moonwalk, I promised him. And I also said that I would never scare him or hurt him, and we would always have fun. From his expression, I could tell that someone had not been honest with him. He was not sure I would keep my word. My challenge was to figure out how to make him feel safer in the water, help him overcome his horrible experience, and motivate him. The next day, the answer came to me when I was whacked by a tail. Chapter 18. Primi Piatti, Labrador Water Polo. The owner of the restaurant appeared with three platters, one with cotoletta a la Valdostana, a veal chop stuffed with fontina cheese and prosciutto, another with Umbrian-style chicken a la cacciatore, chicken with lemon, vinegar, olives, caper, rosemary, sage, garlic, and white wine. The third dish was eggplant involtini, a classic vegetarian dish. Roasted slices of eggplant were rolled around a delicious filling of mozzarella and pecorino romano cheese, toasted pine nuts, golden raisins, Italian parsley, and breadcrumbs. The stuffed eggplant was slowly cooked in a red sauce made with tomatoes, onion, olive oil, lots of garlic, red wine, smoked Spanish paprika, and a zest of an orange. It was light and full of flavor. The food was a feast for the eyes as well as for the stomach. I continued the story. The next day, Jimmy was in the living room, lying on the couch, wearing his swimsuit, watching cartoons, with his two Labrador retrievers lying down on either side of him. When the dogs heard me enter the room, they ran to me with their tails wagging. Jimmy took a couple of steps back when he saw me. Sensing his distrust, the dogs wiggled between him and me, and one dog whacked me with her tail. I told Jimmy that he had two lovely Labradors and that I had a yellow Labrador named Cody. He was my best friend. I asked if we could sit down on the couch together and if he would reintroduce me to his dogs. Jimmy introduced Juliet and Fifi. He said that Juliet was 5 years old and Fifi, her daughter, was 2 years old. Each day for them was grand adventure, and all they wanted to do was play with Jimmy. "Do Juliet and Fifi like to play in the water?" I asked. "They love being in the pool," he said. I was careful not to use the word swim with Jimmy. Instead, I substituted the word play. "Do you think they would like to join us?" "Sure," Jimmy said with a smile, and when I showed him a handful of coins, his smile grew bigger, and he asked what we were going to do with them. I promised I would show him, but I wanted to know if he needed help getting into the water or if he could climb in by himself. He held my hand, and we walked outside to the pool. I climbed down the steps into the pool. I put a coin on the first step. He took a breath, opened my eyes, leaned into the water, picked up the coin, and stood. Jimmy climbed into the water beside me and eagerly tried to do the same, but he kept floating to the surface. I told him he needed to blow out some bubbles so he could lower himself to the water. He was learning that he could float and that by regulating his breathing he could go under the water and then rise back to the surface. While I held him on his back, his feet came up and he opened his eyes and breathed. He was floating. He felt it was magical, and for a moment he was not afraid. Jimmy did not like getting into the water when it went into his ears, so I told him that that was just part of swimming. That happened to the dogs, too, and they shook the water out of their ears after they swam. He could get the water out by ripping his head to the side. I asked Jimmy if he was ready for the Juliet and Fifi to play with us in the pool. I noticed a tennis ball lying beside the pool and tossed it into the deep end. Juliet and Fifi launched themselves from the pool's edge. They flew over our heads. They doggy paddled through the air and looked goofy. Juliet belly flopped. Fifi tackled her and tried to tear the tennis ball from Juliet's mouth. Jimmy laughed so hard he doubled over. I asked Jimmy to watch how the dog swam and he could try to imitate it. The dogs saw him, and they held back. I held Jimmy from behind, and without any hesitation, he was able to doggy paddle for the first time. I told him he was doing great and asked if he could stop and give each dog a hug so that they would know that he was okay and that he loved them. Jimmy gave them long hugs, and when he climbed out of the water, they jumped up and licked him all over his face. In a few lessons, Jimmy was diving for coins, floating and doggy paddling, but he was terrified of swimming in the deep end. I decided to try to change his focus and asked if he would mind if Juliet and Fifi stayed with us for the entire lesson. I asked Jimmy to throw the ball into the middle of the pool while I held Juliet and Fifi by their collars. He threw the ball, and I told him to sprint for it and get it before Juliet and Fifi beat him into it. I would give him 3 seconds of a lead. Jimmy was competitive, and he dog-paddled as fast as he could. I shouted, 1, 2, 3, and then I released the dogs. They chased him, and I told Jimmy they were gaining on him. They were right on his heels. He reached the ball first, grabbed it, and held it above his head. Fifi tried to jump up and steal it, but Juliet moved between her and Jimmy and protected him and the ball. I told him he was playing Labrador water polo. He loved it, and from that day on, he could not wait to get into the water. The dogs made all the difference in teaching him to swim, and during his lesson they raced him, helped him build his speed and endurance, and helped him develop his skills playing Labrador water polo. Juliet and Fifi inspired Jimmy to find his courage. Jimmy mastered all 4 swimming strokes, learned basic life-saving, and became a stronger swimmer. Because of his experience playing Labrador water polo, he made it onto the Los Alamitos High School water polo team, one of the top teams in Southern California. Juliet and Fifi lived long, happy lives, which were always happier when Jimmy returned home after school and for college breaks. Jimmy grew up to become a businessman, and he never lost his love of swimming or dogs. He rescued dogs from shelters, and they have become part of his family. These 2 chapters are from Tales of Al, the Water Rescue Dog, The Making of a Super Athlete by Lynn Cox. Next week, we'll read Chapter 19, Basset Hounds and Puccini, in Tales of Al. Our next reading comes from Best Friends, the March-April 2025 edition, and it is a question to Holly. Dear Holly, I'm a longtime dog owner and follower of Best Friends, but I have hit a new problem. I recently adopted Gordy, a small 10-year-old dog. He has a short coat and, judging from his history, appears to have had little exposure to the cold. I purchased 3 different coats for him, and they help, but the poor dog does not want to go out when it's cold. Gordy sleeps on the bed with me at night, and ultimately I end up with his BMs in the house, usually about 3 a.m. I take him out mid-morning, midday, and just before it gets dark. He eats twice a day, early in the morning and at about 4 p.m. He also gets treats during the day, and I haven't been able to get him to have his BMs in my unfenced yard. How can I keep him warm so he'll do his business outside, even in chilly weather? Dear Cold Comfort, thank you for adopting Gordy. First, let's talk about what you're feeding him. Make sure that his food is good quality and high in nutrients, since some lower quality foods have a lot of fillers, which make for a lot of poop. If you haven't done so already, I recommend that you consult your veterinarian regarding the frequency of Gordy's meals and the type of food he should have. Here are some other ideas. You might want to try making Gordy's early morning feeding his main meal and making the second feeding more of a snack rather than a full meal. You could also include enrichment in the second feeding, such as delivering the food via a food puzzle or a frozen Kong. And if your veterinarian concurs, stop giving him food or treats 4 hours before bedtime. Some dogs really dislike the cold on their feet, so you could try putting booties on him to keep his little paws warm. Some dogs hate booties as much as they hate the cold, but others, with proper introduction to the booties, do get used to them. You mentioned that you take Gordy out several times during the day, but you don't say whether you walk him. Taking him out on a short 10 to 15 minute walk, 30 to 60 minutes after meals or snacks, around the neighborhood may encourage him to do his business outdoors. To eliminate the BMs in the middle of the night, you could try crate training Gordy and having him sleep in a crate instead of in the bed. To learn how to do that, go to bestfriends.org and search for crate training. And here's another question. Dear Holly, we recently adopted a young adult orange tabby cat from our shelter. We named her Ginger, and we love her so very much. Ginger has a lot of energy, and she was constantly begging to go outside. We decided to train her to walk on a leash so we could take her on walks outside. We did a lot of research online, and after practicing the technique inside, we have taken her outside. Ginger loved it. She sniffed and putted around, checking out bush after bush. Then one day on our walk, an off-leash dog came running around a corner and went after Ginger. The dog's owner quickly grabbed him and apologized. Ginger was really freaked out, but not at all harmed. Here's the problem, though. Now, if I see a dog, even on a leash, I pick up Ginger to make sure she stays safe. But when I scoop her up, she panics and scratches and hisses, which makes it hard for me to get back home with her in my arms. She's just fine being picked up inside, but outside it's different. She still begs to go on walks, and I don't want to deprive her, but I don't know what to do. Signed, Catwalk Conundrum. First, I recommend that you take a deep breath when you see a dog and try not to get anxious, because Ginger will pick up on that anxiety. Second, you may want to practice picking her up routinely when you are outside and there is no potential threat. Always reward her when she is calm and being picked up. You could limit Ginger's leash walks to places where you have a clear line of sight to any dangers. Another option, she sounds highly trainable, so you could train her to get in and out of a cat stroller and take her on walks in the stroller instead of on a leash. There's nothing cuter than a cat in a stroller, so be prepared for people approaching you to say hi. I hope Ginger likes to make friends. These questions and suggestions come from Best Friends Magazine, the March-April 2025 edition. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Companions on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.